Welcome to another deep dive, and this time we're headed straight into the book of Joshua, specifically those epic battles of Jericho and Ai. We're using a fascinating lecture from Dr. David Howard, a real expert in all this. It's incredible, right after the Israelites cross the Jordan, talk about hitting the ground running, they're immediately faced with these major challenges as they try to, well, claim the promised land. I think what really draws me to these stories is that they're not just about, you know, military victories, they're really about faith, obedience, what happens when you follow or, well, don't follow what God asks.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. It's like this major turning point for them. I mean, they've just witnessed that incredible miracle at the Jordan, and now, boom, fortified cities. Jericho, especially, it was this massive city, a real obstacle between them and, you know, the land they believed was promised to them. Talk about pressure.
Oh, yeah, you just imagine, right? So, Jericho, their first target. A strategic gateway city, heavily fortified. And, you know, there's this ongoing debate among archaeologists about Jericho. Did it really get destroyed the way the Bible describes? Mm. It makes you wonder, how does archaeology really line up with these biblical accounts?
Right. It's fascinating how archaeology and biblical interpretation kind of come together. You've got scholars like John Garstang, who, you know, believe they found evidence that backed up the Bible. Then you have Kathleen Kenyon, who argued against it. And then there's Bryant Wood, who's got his own take on it. So it really begs the question, how much can we rely on archaeology to understand these ancient texts? It's not always black and white, that's for sure, but it definitely adds a whole new layer to the story.
It does. Okay, so back to the story. So the Israelites march around Jericho, 6 days, total silence, just following God's command. Can you imagine, like, the tension building us every single day? And then the seventh day, they march 7 times, priests blow the trumpets, everyone shouts, and boom, the walls collapse. Dramatic. Much.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's really interesting to compare that, you know, sudden collapse with the Jordan River miracle, which was much more drawn out. It's like God shows his power in different ways. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's this gradual thing, and sometimes it's just boom, instant and awe-inspiring.
It's true. And of course, we have to mention Rahab. I mean, here's this, you know, prostitute who helps the Israelite spies. And amidst all that destruction, she and her family are spared. It's this reminder that even when there's judgment, God's grace, God's mercy, it's still there.
So true. It's a really important point. And Rahab's story, I think it shows us God's compassion, how it goes way beyond just the Israelites. It kind of sets the stage for this idea that God cares for all people, even those who are seen as outsiders.
It does. And then there's this moment, right, where Joshua actually curses anyone who tries to rebuild Jericho. It's intense, and it makes you think about choices, consequences. It's like this divine judgment that just hangs over things over time.
Whoa, right. And the thing is, centuries later, in 1 Kings 16, it actually happened. King Ahab, he rebuilt Jericho, and some pretty terrible things happened to him. It makes you think about divine judgment, doesn't it? Does it always happen right away, or can it play out across generations? It's a big question.
It is. It's incredible how these ancient stories, they had this real historical weight, and, you know, they still speak to us today. So after Jericho, it's on to Ai. A smaller city, seemingly less of a threat. But here's where things take a turn. A real surprise.
Oh, yeah. The whole story shifts at Ai. It's like suddenly God's not there in that initial attack. And the Israelites, they're defeated. It's humiliating. It makes you wonder, why would God, after that amazing victory at Jericho, why would he just, you know, abandon them?
Right. So the text explains that one of the Israelites, Achan, took some forbidden loot from Jericho, this breaking faith thing. It seems to have had huge consequences.
Yeah, that term, breaking faith, in the Hebrew, it's a big deal. It's like infidelity in a marriage. It's this betrayal of that sacred covenant between God and Israel. And because of what Achan did, the entire community suffered.
Wow, it's like his sin had this ripple effect that impacted everyone. It's this reminder that even our choices, the ones that seem, you know, private, they can have bigger consequences, especially in a community setting. And the way Achan's sin is exposed is through this dramatic tribal lottery. It shows us a little about the social structure of ancient Israel, too. He confesses, but, well, the consequences for him and his family are tragic.
They are. And what God says to Joshua after that defeat, it's really powerful. I will be with you no more, he says. God's presence, it was tied to their faithfulness, to keeping the covenant. It reminds me of something similar with the Ark of the Covenant. You know, when they were disobedient and the Ark was captured, it led to disaster.
So there's this consistent theme. God's presence is there when they're faithful to the covenant.
Exactly. It shows us that it wasn't just about rituals or following the law. It was about this deep relationship between God and his people.
Okay, so they've experienced this terrible loss, and God has basically said, He's not with them anymore. What happens next? Does the story just end there?
Oh, not at all. It's crucial to remember that even when they messed up, God's plan for redemption, it keeps going.
Okay, so they've had this huge defeat at AI. God said he wouldn't be with them anymore. So where do they go from there? I mean, can they even recover from that?
Well, it takes time. But the text makes it clear, before anything else can happen, they have to address, you know, the root of the problem, that separation, that sin. Once they deal with Achan, we see things start to shift.
So this second battle at AI, it sounds like it's completely different, like they're back on track.
Yeah, exactly. And this time, God's guidance is back, which is huge. They get this very specific battle plan. It involves an ambush. Pretty clever, really. And this time, there's no room for, you know, anyone going off and doing their own thing. It's all about unity, working together, following God's plan to a T.
Interesting. In the lecture, there's this mention of 5,000 men and then 30,000. Did I miss something there? What's with the numbers?
Ah, you've spotted it. There might be a little discrepancy there in the text, in the numbers. Could be a scribal error, maybe. Or, you know, sometimes numbers in these texts, they have a symbolic meaning, not just a literal one. But the main takeaway, it's crystal clear. With God's help, Israel wins big time. They conquer AI, just like Jericho.
So two cities conquered, but in totally different ways. One's this awesome display of God's power. The other one, it's strategy, obedience, God's commands. So where do they go next? What happens after Ai?
Well, after Ai, the story moves to Mount Ebal. Joshua builds an altar to the Lord there. Now, this wasn't a random thing. It was a command way back from Moses, from Deuteronomy. It's all about keeping that covenant going, following God's law.
So it's more than just taking over the land. It's about how they live there, according to that covenant.
Exactly. And even the altar itself, there are some fascinating details about it. Like, it had to be built with uncut stones. And this ties into, you know, ancient ideas about sacred spaces. The thinking was, if you use tools to shape those stones, it's like human interference, somehow contaminating the altar.
Oh, that's really interesting. It shows you how they thought about the divine,
yeah.
You know, approaching God on his terms. What else happened at Mount Ebal?
Well, Joshua inscribed the law of Moses on these plastered stones, a pretty visual reminder, right? To emphasize how important it was to preserve those sacred texts, mm-hmm. to, you know, pass them down. It was like this outward sign of their commitment to the covenant, to actually living by God's law.
It's like they were laying a foundation, not just for the altar, but for their whole life in the promised land.
Yeah, I like that. And here's something that might surprise you. The text mentions sojourners, or gurs, in Hebrew. They were included in this whole covenant renewal ceremony.
Gurs. Okay, who were they? I'm drawing a blank.
So these were foreigners who were living among the Israelites. Now, they hadn't like officially converted or anything, but they were still welcomed to be part of this important event.
That's kind of surprising. You know, you always think about ancient religions as being pretty exclusive.
Right. That's a common thought. But the inclusion of these gurs, it kind of challenges that idea. It shows us that Israelite identity, you know, who belonged and all that, it was more complex than we might think.
So it wasn't just about ethnicity or bloodlines. It was about choosing to align with God's covenant, about living with his people.
Yeah, you got it. And it gets even more interesting. The Septuagint, that's the ancient Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible, it uses the word proselytes for gur. So it suggests that these foreigners, they weren't just hanging out. They were like moving toward actually converting to the Israelite faith.
So Jer, this term, it covers a whole range from just living among the Israelites to being on the path to conversion. That definitely throws a wrench into the idea that ancient religions were totally closed off. So what did this inclusion look like? I mean, practically speaking.
Well, they were expected to take part in all the important stuff, like the Sabbath, Passover, shows how integrated they were into the community. Yeah. And their commitment, it was to the God of Israel. It also suggests that Israelite identity, at least then, it wasn't just about being born into it. It was about shared faith, a way of life.
It sounds like they were moving towards a more inclusive idea of, well, who belonged?
Yeah, and it makes you think, right? How do we define belonging in our own communities today? What are the criteria? Is it beliefs, background, something else entirely?
It's amazing how these stories from so long ago can make you think about what's going on today.
They really can. That whole thing with the gurs, it highlights this tension, right, that we still see today between keeping a distinct identity and welcoming people who are different.
So far, these chapters have been full of surprises, victories, losses, betrayal, consequences. And now, this whole element of inclusion. What else is in store for us?
Well, stay tuned. You're going to find that these stories, they keep challenging our assumptions, making us ask some really tough questions about faith, about obedience, about how God interacts with people.
You know, it's incredible. These stories from Joshua, they're thousands of years old, but they still have so much to say about faith, about community, even about the choices we make in our own lives.
Yeah, they really do. That's what I love about these ancient texts. They have this timeless wisdom that speaks to people across cultures, across time.
We've seen how important obedience is in Israel's journey. That victory at Jericho, then the defeat at Ai because of Achan, and then victory again once they deal with that sin. It's a powerful reminder, you know, we need to be aligned with God's will.
It is. And it's not about, you know, just blindly following rules. It's about understanding why those rules are there. It's about living in a way that honors that relationship with God. And I think it also reminds us that our choices, they have consequences, not just for us, but for the people around us, too.
That story of Achan, how his sin had this ripple effect, it really makes you think, doesn't it? It's like, Who are the Achans in our own lives? What choices are we making, you know, that seem small, personal, but could actually have a much bigger impact on our families, our communities, even the world around us?
That's a really good point. It makes us stop and think about, you know, why are we doing what we're doing? What's driving our choices? Are we building things up or tearing them down? Are we thinking about others or just ourselves? Those are some big questions to wrestle with.
They are. And then there's this whole issue of the destruction of the Canaanites. And it's tough, right? It raises all these questions about God's justice, his mercy. How do we make sense of that violence, those descriptions, and still believe in a God who loves and cares for people?
Yeah, it's one of those things that you can't just brush aside. It's hard. But I think we have to remember, we're reading these texts through a modern lens. The world back then, it was a brutal place. Warfare was everywhere. But even then, even in those stories, we see these glimpses of God's mercy, like with Rahab and her family.
And with the inclusion of the Gerers, too. It shows that God's care, it goes beyond the Israelites. It's not just about conquering. It's about building a community, a place where even foreigners, people who weren't originally part of the covenant, can belong.
Exactly. It suggests this broader understanding of God's love, his grace. It challenges us to think about, you know, who are the outsiders in our own world? How can we be more inclusive, more welcoming to people who are different from us?
This has been an amazing deep dive. So much to think about. It's amazing how these stories from Joshua can make us ask these deep questions about faith, justice, mercy, about what it means to be human.
They really can. And I don't think it's about finding all the answers, you know? It's about the journey, the wrestling with these questions. These texts, they invite us to do that, to think about the big things, to question what we believe, to grow in our understanding of God, of ourselves, of our place in his story.
Well said. I'm definitely leaving with a sense of awe, but also a lot to ponder.
And I hope you keep exploring, keep asking questions. Don't be afraid of the tough parts of the Bible. Engage with them. Think deeply. Pray about them. And let them challenge you, shape you, and grow your understanding of God.
That's great advice. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you've enjoyed it.
It's been a pleasure.
And we hope it's inspired you to keep digging into the Bible, discovering all its riches and complexities. Until next time.